Mark Sacchino is here from Golf Talk Canada. Marco, how are you today, sir?
I'm good, James. Nice to have our national championship back. 3 years in the making, we've been waiting for this. So I think everybody anywhere near the golf community, golf fans, people associated with the sport, etc., I think thrilled that it's finally back on Canadian soil.
Yeah, nice to have it back on the calendar. Nice to have the calendar back too, by the way. having said that, I mean, your tour of the facilities, I know you've got your best man on it, which is you. What do you think of it?
You know, the course is in magnificent condition. The rough is crazy. You know, they have not chopped the rough or cut the rough pretty much almost, you know, with the exception of a trim here or there, the majority of the year. They're trying to grow it thick, lush, long, and then the PGA Tour obviously come in and do that bit of that tango with Golf Canada and the tournament committee to try to land on a length of the rough that they'll agree upon. Because, you know, James, to be bluntly honest with you, the PGA Tour, you know, would like to see that rough probably, you know, at 2 1/4, 2.5 inches long and no more. And the tournament committee would like to see it up over 3 inches, you know, maybe thicker, 3.5, 4, who knows, to really make it a penalty for missing the fairway. Right now, at this day, at this moment in time, if you or I were out there playing golf and you missed a fairway, I would say 80% of the time, it's just a sand wedge back to the fairway. You really cannot advance the golf ball to the green. And the PGA Tour...
Wow.
Likely not going to be able. I'd be very surprised if they allowed them to keep it like that. The good news is as they've grown it so thick and it's so lush that even if the tour gets them to chop it down, which is likely, it's still going to be penalizing. It's still going to be not easy rough to deal with out there at St. George's. The fairways, they're forgiving. There's some large, generous areas off the tee. But if you miss them, it's going to be a problem for the players.
I mean, you know, we're talking about a premier course here, St. George's. So what do they have to do? I mean, we're talking about the rough, and it's really, it's just the grade of the cut that we're talking about. Do they do anything else? Because when this event goes to Hamilton, usually it's a pretty good makeover for that course.
Yeah, other than the rough, there's not much they can do. The two things that they have working in their favor right now is they redid all the putting surfaces a few years ago. And they redid the third green. And that third green was a problem the last time the Canadian Open was there 12, 13 years ago. And the reason it was a problem was there was so much pitch from back to front that they had to slow that green down. They could not cut and roll that green or it would have been unputtable. And the PGA Tour has a policy that all the greens need to be cut and rolled at the same pace. So when they slowed down to that third green to... you know, 9, 9.5 on the stint meter, whatever the number was, instead of the normal 12 that we see week in, week out on the PGA Tour, they slowed all the greens on the property. And when they did that, it became a fairly simple test and took a lot of teeth out of the greens, the old greens in St. George's. Well, now that all the greens have been redone, the third green's been completely redesigned. The hole's completely redesigned. It's going to allow the PGA Tour to have these greens running at 12 from the first green right through to the 18th green. They're going to be able to cut these, roll these, and get them to the speed they want. So that's a real added benefit since the last time that the PGA Tour was here. The other good news is that they're going to convert the fourth hole from a par 5 to a par 4. So it'll be playing as a par 70, not as a par 71. So as a par 70 with some faster greens, I still expect the scores to be super low because by modern day standards, this is not a long golf course. Again, fairly forgiving off the tee. Again, if you miss the fairway, will be a problem, but lots of room off the tee. So scores are still going to be good. But I think with the conversion of a par 71 to a par 70 and the green speeds back to normal, the way we anticipate them at Canadian Opens year in and year out, I expect a much better test this time around.
Okay, one more on the RBC Canadian Open before we veer off into the tournament of the week. You know, obviously it sits right before the U.S. Open, and this was something, you know, that moving it around has costed, I think, in the past. When you look at the purse, 8.7, that's as good as you get in a non-major. That's for sure. That's a really good purse. Do you think The roar has been restored for the RBC Canadian Open.
Well, if we go on the last time we had one in terms of 2019, Rory McIlroy defending champion, Brooks Koepka in the field, the quality of the field was exceptional, and the tournament was a great success at Hamilton and probably the greatest Canadian Open of this century anyway. The last time we saw a Canadian Open even remotely close to that type of strength would have been, late 80s out at Glen Abbey. So they certainly had it back. The bite was back and the roars were there in 2019. Fast forward now to 2022, back on the calendar. If we go by quality of field, James, I guess the answer is yes. This field looks tremendous. We're going to have all the RBC ambassadors in the field, which, that's a fairly elite group. World number one, Scottie Scheffler, Cameron Smith, Tony Finau, probably the strongest collection of Canadians, if we're going strength in numbers, the strongest group of Canadians we've likely ever had. So I would say yes. I think this is a really good position on the calendar. Are there going to be players, some of the best players in the world, that choose not to play a week before a major? Yeah, it's going to happen. But I think in terms of the big picture, I mean, this is a way better position and the quality of the field looks amazing. So I think they're ready for another home run. And from what I've been told, the number from depending on who you speak to, from a ticket sales perspective, corporate support perspective with hospitality, et cetera, we're looking anywhere between 15% to 25% more than they targeted and anticipated for fan and corporate support. So this is going to be a big home run.
Excellent. So let's go to the Charles Schwab Challenge, which is this week's tournament. I don't know if you probably don't have a betting sheet in front of you or know the odds. Who do you like in this?
I think Jordan Spieth's the no-brainer pick. I think everybody was surprised at his performance last week at the PGA, although that was a bit of an outlier, very strange golf course. That PGA was affected by weather last week and luck of the draw, similar to way you and I would be chatting, Jim, about the Open Championship. Like going over to St. Andrews and hoping you get the right window to play golf. And that felt very much like that last Thursday, Friday, when it came to the PGA. So if we throw the PGA aside and look at the last, 45 days as a sample size, Jordan Spieth's got a win, he's got a second place finish, and he's coming to a golf course where he's got a victory and 3 second place finishes. I mean, he loves Colonial. This is his backyard. So, is it a guarantee that, he's going to go out and win? No, there's 140 of the world's best players there fighting against him. But I mean, it would be shocking if he weren't able to contend, because it seems year in and year out, regardless of how he's playing, he contends at Colonial, and we just happen to be in the stretch right now where he's playing well. So I think Jordan Spieth is clearly the favorite in the field, and that's saying a lot because the field's pretty good this week. Scottie Scheffler's back, world number one after a bizarre miscut at the PGA. Justin Thomas in the field this week, obviously riding super high off his second major. So, I mean, it's a super strong field. Everybody loves Hogan's Alley. This tournament has such a rich history on the PGA Tour. It's a ball strikers golf course. Morikawa, one of the betting favorites. Everybody waiting for him to get it going this year because it's a ball strikers golf course. So it should be a good week in Texas.
Trying to squeeze in a couple before we have to say goodbye. Justin Thomas with that monumental Sunday, how would you rate that in terms of great Sundays in major events?
I think he saved the broadcast, Jim. It was just a bit of a snooze fest, wasn't it? And then the last 90 minutes, it got exciting and he got in there. It ties the record for comeback for PGA, third all time in majors, with seven back to start the day. Quite the comeback. At the end of the day, if we step outside and look at this, he was chasing down three players that are very talented and probably have bright futures on the PGA Tour, but collectively, Will Zalatoris, Mito Pereira, Cameron Young, they combined for 0 wins on the PGA Tour in their career. So got to keep that in perspective, that Justin Thomas was clearly the class of this field on a Sunday, but exciting finish and good for him. Now 15 wins, 2 majors, working on a Hall of Fame career all of a sudden.
Yeah, we've seen reversals on Sunday, but not like that, and that's impressive. So one more. Now that the PGA Championship is in the rearview mirror, Phil Mickelson, has the conversation around him changed, or is it still the same, and what is it?
I think what we're going to have to wait and see is a couple of weeks, Jim. We're going to know a lot in a couple of weeks because that first LIV Series golf event is opposite the RBC Canadian Open. And all the players that have been kind of walking around ducking questions, hiding in the shadows, who have registered to play in this tournament, we're going to know in a couple of weeks who these people are. And in all likelihood, you have to assume at the moment that Phil Mickelson is one of those players. And if Phil Mickelson is one of those players, then we all have to assume that the PGA Tour is going to move forward with a suspension for those players because they did not grant them a release. So if they are being suspended, how long is the suspension for? What legally can they do? How long can they legally suspend them for? And then it becomes very interesting because the PGA Tour can suspend Phil Mickelson, Kevin Na, Louis Oosthuizen, Lee Westwood, etc., the players that are rumored to be there. They can suspend them for the remainder of the season and possibly further, but they have no jurisdiction over major championships. So it'll be interesting to see the ball in the court of the USGA because Phil has qualified for the U.S. Open as his PGA Championship victory last year gives him a 5-year window at the U.S. Open. So he has the right to be there. He is registered to play. So does the USGA turn around, follow suit, support the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour and say, we're suspending you from U.S. Open play? Or do they go rogue, go out on their own and say the USGA has an open, it's an open championship. Thus the word open is in anyone can qualify. Phil has qualified and he's welcome to play. So it's going to be super interesting, but I mean a lot in the next 30 days, so much is going to happen in this saga.
It's going to be interesting to watch from the side. That's for sure. Marco, thank you very much.
Later, James. Have a great one.
You too. That's Mark Sacchino, Golf Talk Canada.